Imagine traveling back to a time before the internet, before Mountain Dew Livewire, and before the neo-post-apocalypse. This summer, Apocalypse Video asked the question, where were you in 1982?
I mean, what happened? How did everything that was so good get so bad?
A time when men were men.
I got nowhere up to go! I got nowhere up to go!
Women were women.
You gotta be fucking kidding.
And mice could talk.
My son Timothy is so sick.
Join us all summer long as we celebrate the box office hits and misses of 1982. The date is still August 13th, 1982. John Cougar Mellencamp's Hurt So Good is sitting comfortably in the number 4 spot after topping former champion The Human League. And a former American gigolo is about to enter flight school as he hopes to become an officer, or at least a gentleman. The film is An Officer and a Gentleman, and it's about to fake a pregnancy now.
Join the Navy.
You join the Navy.
What's so funny?
You, man.
Flying low and feeling me.
What for? Jets. Wanna fly jets?
Not a family by the stream.
Grace, look at yourself. Officers don't have tattoos.
What's your name, boy?
Mayo. Zach Mayo, sir.
Go, go, come on, baby.
You got a girl mail to walk?
No, I ain't looking for one either.
What are you looking for?
I'll tell you something about the local girls that come across the Sound on the ferry every weekend. Just one thing in mind, and that's to marry themselves a naval aviator.
I heard about these girls, they're looking for a husband.
Not me.
I will use every means necessary, fair and unfair. Oh! Oh! Trip you up. Expose your weaknesses as a potential aviator and as a human being. I expect to lose half of you before I'm finished. So get out of here!
I think it'd be a gas to fly.
Just how far would you go to get that? Would you let yourself get pregnant?
Don't trick him or try to trap him.
So, Zach, what do you do with the girl when you're through with her, huh?
I see you've had some training, man, eh? Oh. In every class, there's always one joker who thinks that he's smarter than me.
What kind of a human being are you?
You better lock it up, boy.
I'm trying to be nice to you. I'm trying to be your friend, Zach.
Well, then be a friend. Get out of here.
Now, why would a slick little hustler like you want to sign up for this kind of abuse anyway?
I want to fly jets, sir.
My grandmama wants to fly jets.
No, man, you ain't nothing special. And if you ask me, you ain't got no chance of being no officer.
I ain't gonna quit. You're out. Don't you do it. Don't. I got nowhere to go!
Richard Gere, Deborah Winger. An Officer and a Gentleman.
Hey, Michael, it's 3 o'clock. Where's the goddamn whistle?
Oh, does that throw off your thing?
I'm trying to remember what they say. What do they say after that?
I don't remember.
I gotta go, man. Where the little boy's poopy room is calling.
The little boy's poopy room is calling.
Little boy poopies are to the right.
I don't think they said that in this movie.
Oh, yes. I wrote it down because there were several quotes from what's-his-face that I wrote down.
You write down all the
little girl poopies to the left, little boy poopies to the right.
On the double now. You lord asses, I'm going to fix you. Come on, get up in there. Quick! On the double mayonnaise. Come on, Seeger. Little girl poopies to the left, little boy poopies to the right. Come on, let's go. but a motley bunch. Get in there.
Do you think? Are you telling me you could make a better drone instructor than Louis Gossett Jr.?
Well, let's see, Dave.
All right, let's go.
I prepared a chant. I don't know what I've been told.
I don't know what I've been told.
Apocalypse video selection is gold.
Apocalypse video selection's gold.
The manager, Dave, is mighty odd.
Manager, Dave, is mighty odd.
But the son of a bitch knows how to pod.
But the son of a bitch knows how to pod. Officer and an officer and a gentleman. This is kind of... I guess I would put this on my pile of shame. This is like a really known movie. It was one of the highest grossing movies of 1982. It won a bunch of Oscars. It has like a super parodyable ending that I've seen in Simpsons. I know this movie from Simpsons.
I agree with you. I knew that this ending, I actually, I didn't know that, excuse me, I didn't know the ending was from this. But I knew like the ending, right? I knew there was some 80s movie where love lifts you up where we belong. Love lifts us up, and so does Richard Gere from the factory. And you made some allusions to something beforehand that maybe we'll get into before we start recording. I will say the ending of this movie does kind of seem out of nowhere, and it's a bit of like, what is going on? Like I was surprised. I was still kind of confused at the ending of like, what? Like, why are we doing
this? That's why we were saying before we recorded, I was saying like, so spoiler alert, folks, this seems to be a recurring thing on this series, but Dave was high again watching this.
Yeah, I don't know how this is a recurring theme.
Well, I was asking a Mike before we started recording. I'm like, is there a gentleman in this movie? I think that's debatable. Like I think the problem is you never really get a handle on Zach Mayo and you know what he wants, and I guess that's part of his character. Like he doesn't want to let people in. He's very closed off and just like
it's really a kind of simple story. Like it's a love story, right?
Yeah.
But it's also kind of like this Richard Gere story of he's going. I mean, in the simplest terms, he's going to boot camp. He's learning to be an officer, and he's dating this girl, and he's learning to be a gentleman, right?
I'm going to school to learn to be a gentleman.
No, he's dating the girl to be a gentleman. The girl is teaching him how to be a gentleman, or that relationship is teaching. You know, because it's kind of like half the movie is him at boot camp, and half the movie is him with this relationship, and the relationship is where he's learning to be a gentleman. Like, you know, in the beginning when he's like treating her like she's like a sex worker or something, like he's mm-hmm. just like, you know, like get on there and have sex with me.
Probably one of the big scenes of this movie for me, I mean, aside from the ending, was the I mean, we're kind of jumping to the middle of the movie here, but when he meets with so he's at boot camp for like, I think they say 13 weeks. That's this mm-hmm. this program to become like a naval aviator, as Louis Gossett Jr. says.
But then they also say it's kind of weird because they're like, oh, this program is the end. But at the beginning of the movie, they're like, it takes 6 years to be a pilot. Like, you're going to give us 6 years.
Well, this is like the first step, I guess.
Yeah, it is the first step. But it kind of muddles it a bit where it's like, when he's done with this, it's kind of like he's done. He's made it. But like, he still has like 5.5 years, I think, to go. Like
I guess you could say this is like him getting his foot through the door, essentially.
Yeah, yeah,
like
yeah.
Now the real work starts, sure. Which is saying something. I guess maybe there's a lot of real work in boot camp.
Maybe the sense is like there is a winnowing, people drop out, but after this, people don't really leave. Like he's in it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the kind of the big thing about this movie, so Zach Mayo plays this guy. He's just finished college. He's had to live with his shitty father, a naval petty officer played by Robert Loggia.
Is this one of our
Loggia.
Worst fathers we have seen?
I think so. I was shocked. I had no idea Robert Loggia was even in this.
I thought when
his introduction.
We literally like opened the movie on like on Richard Gere looking at this guy in bed with a random girl. I thought this was gonna be like he like because we don't know it's his dad or anything. I thought like is this like Richard Gere's like wife,
and buddy,
he just
something.
Like walked in on like an affair, and he's like thinking about what to do. Like, I didn't really get it. Obviously, once the guy is like interacting with Richard Gere and it's like friendly ish, I'm like, okay, that's not what's happening. But
and then you get like a quick like, every time I wake up in the morning, I relive my backstory.
Yes, yeah. There's like flashbacks to like him in like the Philippines, I guess, getting picked on for being a little kid. We get the classic like very yellow tinted streets of non-Western country.
Yeah and I guess his dad is like, it's like, yeah, I knocked up your mom, I guess technically I'm your dad, and your mom killed herself, so now you gotta live with me. And I gotta tell you, boy, I like to fuck. That's Robert Loggia's whole thing in this movie. He's like, I like to bang a lot of women.
I don't go in for all that dad stuff. Like, he's a total just like dictionary definition fuck up.
What makes it even weirder? So it's like they live together, and I guess the dad is bringing women home like he's like some like college like bro. You know?
Yeah, he's getting so drunk that he like. It doesn't seem like an unusual occurrence that he wakes up and immediately throws up and has to drink.
Give me a towel.
Yeah, give me.
And there's also
that's my throw up towel.
Well, there's also the suggestion that, well, not the suggestion. This has been happening since Zach Mayo, Richard Gere's character, was a kid. He's been living with his dad for years now, and this is just something that his dad does. And there's also the suggestion that, like, he got a girl for Richard Gere, like, the night before. It's like, hey, happy birthday, or something like that. Let's go bang these brides in the back.
I think they're just paying for sex constantly. Like, that's alcohol and sex.
But at this point, Zach Mayo is done. He's like, well, I'm gonna enlist. I'm gonna go into the Navy, man. He's like, what? Are you kidding me? Officers aren't like us, guys.
They don't have a small tattoo on your arm.
What's so funny? You, man. It's like saying you're gonna run for fucking president. Christ, look at yourself. Officers don't have tattoos. Look, I'll see you, man. All right. Hey. Zach, come on. Don't be pissed off.
I'm not pissed off.
Hey, you are pissed off, man. Come on. I'm on your side, bud. I don't want to see you do something you're going to regret. You got to give up 6 fucking years of your life to the Navy if you want to fly. 6 fucking years with the most uptight assholes God ever put on this earth. Mm. Officers, man, they're not like you and me. They're a different breed.
You know what this sounds like? Sounds like you're afraid you might have to salute me someday, Chief.
Oh my god, that scene was unintentionally hilarious. When Zach Mayo finally leaves and the credits start up, and you get this close-up of his arm and he slaps this gigantic, like, dual band-aid on his arm to cover up his tattoo, and that's when it comes. That's when it comes up on the screen. An officer and a gentleman. It don't know about you. I started laughing at this moment. It was unintentionally funny.
I didn't laugh at it, but it is, you know, sign of the times, I guess, that, like, who cares? Like, of all the things about this guy, this little, like, eagle
tattoo.
Yeah. It's not, like an offensive tattoo or anything, you know.
It's like an eagle.
It might as well say, like, U.S. Navy.
I know. When he gets in there, like, that's like Louis Gossett Jr. clocks it immediately. He's like, what is this? You injured? And then he like pulls the thing up. He's like, oh, nice work. Yeah. This is the Philippines. Yeah, I know the work. Yeah. So it ends up not mattering at all. Yeah. But yeah, as you said, like, the two big things about this movie, it oscillates back between Zach Mayo in boot camp and his developing relationship with. And this was the thing about the movie that I thought was crazy. The Puget Sound Debs, as they're known.
Yeah.
It's they come in, it's like, oh, a new class is coming in into the Naval Academy.
Now, a Puget Deb will tell you, oh, baby, don't you worry about no contraceptives. I got that all taken care of. But don't you believe a word of it, sweet pea. Because a Puget Deb will do anything and say anything to trap you. I know this sounds silly to you, especially in this so-called modern age. But you scuzzy college pukes had better watch out, because they're out there. And you, sweet peas, are the answer to the dream.
This is a bit like, I know we talked about Roadhouse, where, okay, I guess this movie has invented a world where bouncers are like kings and queens, and everyone knows everyone about bouncers right across the country. Mm-hmm. There's a bit of that going on with this, where like everybody in this town, all the women in this town, they all work in the same place, and they mm-hmm. all exist to have relationships with the incoming classes of officers. And the dream is one of these officers is going to whisk them away to...
Because only three people, like, go on, like, in this boot camp program thing.
Yeah. And the idea is that they're... I think more than three people can go on.
Oh, it's like with honors. Oh, no, only three people get to fly jets. They go into the jet program. That's what it
was. Well, they're just hoping to find anyone, I think, who makes it through. Like, lots of people just make it through. I think they just want to find someone who makes it through and doesn't leave them. And then whisk them away to a life of military bases across the world, which is more glamorous than living in the Pacific Northwest, podunk middle of they're not like in Seattle or anything or Portland. They're in like Nowheresville.
I think it's Port Townsend. I think they
live in a factory. They live in around this factory that seems to be making paper or something. Unclear. Lots of sparks, lots of envelopes seems to be flying around.
It's just insane to me. Like, and there's two women in this, Deborah Winger, who plays Paula.
We have a brunette and a blonde. Is who?
Yeah, and so it's Paula and Lynette.
Lynette, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and Lynette's really, as we introduce them, like, Lynette, they're literally, like, we see them in a car. She's like, come on, the new class is coming. And she's, like, getting dressed and everything. Lynette is the one that falls into that Puget Sound Deb thing. Like, it doesn't seem like Paula cares all that much about this. Did I read that right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, Lynette is the one that, and there's this thing, like, Louis Gossett Jr. even tells them as they're, like, doing the standard, like, boot camp push-up scenes, like, I gotta warn you, there's the Puget Sound Debs, and they're gonna do anything to get you. Well, he seems to suggest that they want to get you out of the program.
Hot brides who live in this town who are gonna want to hook up with you when you have liberty, and
there's also this thing, like, they'll say and do anything, including lying to get pregnant or getting pregnant, and, like, sucking you in into a marriage. Yeah. It's just like, again, like this world that exists within this town is, I find, so crazy. And again, I'm watching this while stoned, mind you. So, like, it's particularly crazy. I'm just like, everyone just knows, like, all the women in this town. Like,
are you waiting for, like, one of the characters to look into the camera, like, I'm pregnant, Dave? What do we have to do? What are we going to do about this, Dave? This is your responsibility.
And it actually happens in this movie, which is so crazy. Lynette's just like, she saddles up with David Keith, who we've seen before. He played the cowboy in Indian in the Cupboard, if you recall.
Episode wow. Years back. Wow.
This was kind of one of his big
movies. Kind of like the second, probably the second biggest character. He's like Richard Gere's buddy in the boot camp training.
Yeah, Sid.
We'll talk, I don't know when you want to get into what befalls Sid, but that was, I think, nuts. Like, I think a dramatic swerve that kind of came out of nowhere, I think, is the messiest thing about the movie. I don't know. Maybe I'm willing to, like...
That's actually, like, the one thing I knew about the movie is that he kills himself, and it's because of, like... But I had it wrong. I thought it was because, like, he gets with a girl, and she has an abortion, and that's why he kills himself. But no, there is no baby.
Yeah. I didn't know that he was going to kill himself in this, and I feel like it's so out of character and kind of out of nowhere. I didn't really like it. It felt like, it's almost like, to me, I know this came out like before Full Metal Jacket and stuff, I think, but it came out after a lot of Vietnam movies that are more like, you know, Vietnam movies, right? Vietnam War movies. And this is very much like a war movie in peacetime, you know, like it's a military movie that's about peacetime, something we get with Top Gun too, where it's and there's like something that's like kind of awkward about that, because it's like it has a lot of the trappings of something like you know, The Deer Hunter or Apocalypse Now, but it doesn't go that. It's peace, right? There's no like war to really like focus on, and there's a bit of, I feel like, well, we got to have something like that happen in these kind of movies, right? Like we got to shove in like a suit to show that this is like the real like intense shit, you know? Like I don't know, it feels like something that's shoved into a different movie to me.
No, it kind of shows like because Zach Mayo doesn't really care about anybody. Like he's like, I just want to be an officer. I want to fly jets. Is like, and he keeps telling Sid, like, I don't care about women. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I don't want to care about a relationship. I'm focused on getting this. And that's when, during that, he meets up with Paula
Lynette.
Him and Sid meet up with Paula and Lynette, and he develops that relationship. And throughout the movie, like throughout these 13 weeks, I guess like every weekend is a suggestion.
Yeah. The timing is a little fuzzy. The timing is a little fuzzy for me. And sometimes like people were, there's a port towards the end where people are like upset that it's been a while since I've seen you. It's almost like it's over. But I thought only a week had gone by. So I was like, really unclear about the timeline and what was going on here, like,
because it's only a few months.
Yeah, the whole thing. Yeah, so yeah. It is weird, and but yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of like the basic thing is, Ian, the friend, is like, he's the classic like, oh, I got a girl back home, and like I'm just messing around here while she's
and
not
it's
there.
His brother's wife, right?
Yeah, his brother's wife. His brother
died
was
in Vietnam.
His brother did die in Vietnam, so there's still some Vietnam ghosts going around here. And it's kind of the arc of like, oh, actually, maybe I don't want to marry this girl back home. Maybe I'm just doing it because I feel like I have to. Maybe I don't even want to be an officer. And maybe I actually love
this. I'm doing that because my brother was an officer.
Right. And maybe I actually love this girl who I'm just like fooling around with and I was jerking around with. And then.
Well, that's the contrast between him and Mayo. Like he cares about what everyone else thinks. Right. Mayo does not.
Right. And but he, you know, that the arc changes, and but then he kills himself because she breaks up with him, basically.
Well, she yeah, this is the crazy part. So she basically tells him like, I missed my period, yeah, I'm pregnant, and he's like, oh god. So he decides like 1 week before he's going to graduate, basically, or
she is like it's awful what she did, clearly, but she didn't lay it on as thick as all that. Like she was like,
maybe I ain't.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not
but
necessarily
she's doing the
defending
thing that everyone
her.
Said that the Puget Sound Debs will do. Right, they will try to trap you.
Right. She did try to trap, because she basically like, as soon as Ian basically is like, you know,
Sid,
what?
Sid.
You're
saying Ian.
Ian, what's his name? Dead?
Sid Worley.
Where did I get Ian from?
I have no idea.
Well,
from looking at the cast list, I don't see any Ians.
Yeah. Sid Worley. He quits the program like right at the end, which is like super, so dumb.
Who quits on the 11th week?
Yeah. And it's like with a classic thing of like, once she realizes he's quit, she completely changes and is like, oh.
Oh, you're not going to be a pilot?
Yeah.
An officer? Well, I don't care about you then.
Yeah, I don't care about you. There's no baby. Bye.
Oh, my God. Oh, it's beautiful.
It cost me my whole savings, but I said, what the fuck?
Oh, God. Oh, Sid. Oh. So, does this mean...
Yes, ma'am. That's what...
Oh, Sid.
Let's get to Justice Peace and do it right now.
Oh, okay.
Right
now. Tell Paula. Oh, Sid, I wonder where we're going to get stationed first. Oh, I hope we go to Hawaii. You know, I've always wanted to go to Hawaii.
Oh, honey, we're not going to get stationed anywhere. I DOR'd.
You what?
I DOR'd. Hell, I was never cut out to be a pilot. I was faking it. I've been faking everything in my life up to now.
But what do we do? Where would we go?
Oklahoma. I'm gonna get my old job back at JCPenney's. Hell, in 2 years, I'll be floor manager. Oh, you're gonna love Oklahoma. And you and Mom are gonna get along great. Money might be a little tight at first, so we might have to live here at home. It's gonna work out.
Sid, there's no baby.
What?
It is. It's funny how comically awful his plan it, like, sounds. Like if I'm hoping like for the sweet life, she's like, "Ooh, where are we gonna be stationed? Hawaii?" You know, and he's like, well, "Don't worry, I quit. We'll go back to my home, Oklahoma, and we'll work."
Doesn't
in
he also
J.C.
say like
Penney's.
We'll live with my folks?
Yeah, he everything he says is like worse. He's like, "We'll get my old job back at a J.C. Penney's. If I play my cards right, in a few years I could be the assistant store manager. Money's gonna be tight though. We're gonna have to live with my folks. You'll love them."
It reminds me of Fast Times at Ridgemont High, where it's like, "I'll be the assistant to the assistant manager."
It is. It is. Yeah.
And she just doesn't want any part of this. She's like,
I mean, she does.
Me?
She lives in like, can you describe like where this character lives, Dave? Like, I'm imagining
right
if you were
the ocean.
Well, okay. She specifically, like, when we visit the other characters, the other Debs, they live in sort of like little quaint houses that you'd expect by a factory town. This character, Lynette, she lives in like a burnt out shack that like it looks like she lives in like the ruins of a town that used to exist. Like, I'm not confident she has electricity in going on. In
I guess
building.
I was more distracted by like, wow, what a view. That house probably costs like $1 million now.
Oh, the house was demolished, and on top of it was there's apartments now that cost $1 million.
Yeah.
That's a high rise. That house is like crumbling. It's like a crumbling.
So like living with this guy's parents in Oklahoma would be an upgrade for her.
Maybe. It's Oklahoma though. You know.
Well, it's still as shitty as it is what he's describing. Like it is like. It does feel like super shitty. And like when Zach Mayo and Paula like confront her about it, he even says like, "What the fuck are you doing?"
Yeah. Like, and then he kills himself. And then he kills himself, which I think is just like wild and kind of out of nowhere. Like, I get that he'd be really bummed.
Well, it would be really, because again, yeah, who quits on the 11th week? Like, he could have been an officer. He could have had that going for him.
At this point, like, he could have very easily just gone back to Lou Agassi Jr. and be like, "Dude, she did the thing. Can I come back?" I'm sure he would have been like, "Yeah, of course."
I don't think so. He's like, "I warned you, idiot. You little poopy ass.
Maybe that's it. Maybe he's screwed, I guess, and like he can't go back.
You feel like he has no options left.
It is pretty
wild. Let everyone down.
He goes to the hospital right afterwards, and he was like going to propose to Lynette, and he just like swallows the ring with alcohol. And he's like,
that was weird.
That was a really disturbing, in retrospect, that is feels like something you do before you kill yourself.
And the guy, the desk clerk, is like, "These crazy kids."
These crazy kids.
"I got another kid coming in here going to kill himself. It's going to be a long afternoon for me."
There's always one every class.
Yeah, Louis Gossett Jr. failed to mention that. Like, one of you will kill yourself.
One of you will lose all hope.
But yeah, that's Sid's story, and it is, like, shocking. You're just like, wow.
I believe you
and
mean
again,
Ian,
for me,
Dave?
Oh, you mean, yeah, Ian. Sorry.
I don't know where I got Ian. Jesus.
It was, it was crazy, because I knew there was, like, an abortion. That's why I kind of set it up at the end of the Fast Times episode. Like, oh, you know, we're going to have another abortion story. But there is no abortion story in this. It was a ruse.
That was a rejected theme for this year's Summer Film Fest.
But yeah, that was shocking. But and like you said, like, wow, that kind of came out of, well, not maybe not out of nowhere, but
out of nowhere, you know. But I don't feel like the movie earned that, or like the character earned that for me. It I don't like it in this movie.
Well, it doesn't, and it seems like he's capable in almost everything in the program. He only starts mm-hmm. to, he only loses like one, he only fails one test because he's all bent out of shape about what's happening with Lynette.
Yeah. I mean, they kind of set up, I think he's like the best, just sort of generic pilot man guy, probably there. He's just out of sorts because he's been deb-trapped.
And that's why Zach Mayo later tries to go up to Gossett Jr. because he's under the impression that Gossett Jr. just like kicked him out or something, when in fact, no, Ian or Sid came to Louis Gossett Jr. and wanted out. And so Zach Mayo's like, you asshole! Like, come on, you fucker! Like, how dare you let him out? He's like, he let himself out. Oh? That's, yeah, exactly.
I thought the DIs were supposed to help everybody out around here. What kind of a human being are you?
You better lock it up, boy. You're going to be going home with him.
Zach, go back to the barracks, please.
I don't get this. He's the best candidate in the class. He's the best student, the best leader, best friend to everybody. Get you bend your goddamn rules for once.
Zach, he didn't ask me to DOR. I went to him.
What are you talking about?
I'm glad it's over, buddy. I wasn't here for me. He was right. I was here for everybody but me. I was here for my big brother.
But that's another thing about this movie. So there's the Sid story. There's the boot camp training, which we'll get to. And then there's the gentleman part where Zach Mayo is learning to be a gentleman with Paula. And this was the part where I was just like, I couldn't keep up with Zach Mayo and his mood shifts. You know what I mean? Like, he's impossible to nail down. But then I guess the suggestion at the end is like, no, I'm going to be a pilot. I passed the program, spoiler. And then you're also going to be my girlfriend. And I guess like you'll come with me as I become an officer.
Yeah, that's where, kind of where I get to like the very end of this movie, the famous scene. I'm like, what is happening? Like, they're not getting married. They're not like, I don't understand, like, why is everyone clapping, you know, for like what is the significance here of him coming? He comes back, picks her up and puts it, walks out of the factory and everyone's
yeah
but he's not marrying her. Like, that's never been discussed.
But the suggestion is definitely upbeat. Like, this is a great thing.
Yes.
This is what Reddit would call an uplifting moment.
It feels like, you mentioned Reddit, it feels like one of those, like, fake things on Reddit, like, and then everyone clapped. Like, you know, like, I stood up there and I told the Starbucks employee that actually I ordered a venti frappuccino and they realized their mistake and everybody clapped.
Uplifting news is what this would be. But in my and I will say, hi, Dave was crying during this moment.
You were
but
crying. It's like, you were crying.
But looking back on it, I don't know why. Well, I was. It was a combination of crying and also laughing, because again, I go back to Simpsons. Like, I keep thinking, he's like, tell my boss I'm going out with my wife and I won't be back for 15 minutes. Like, I kept thinking about that and laughing, but like the scene, the music got me. But now as I'm looking back on it, I'm like, why is this happy?
Because,
again, are they getting married?
I mean, he goes in there, he picks her up and leaves, and everyone claps. And there's a couple people like, harumphing, because they're upset about it. She's probably fired after this, right? Like, she just, like, left.
Well, is that the suggestion? It's like, I'm taking you away from this factory world where you make paper or something, and you're coming with me, Paula.
We're both going to live off my training cadet salary, because I have another 5 years. But again, he's not an officer at the end of this movie. He has the bulk of the training is still in front of him. He's just
You're
made
gonna
it
work
past
at the Safeway. We'll get by.
I'm getting stationed in El Paso, and you're going to work at a McDonald's.
Yeah, it's just like, because again, the ending would lead you to believe this is uplifting. This is not a graduate ending. There's no last shot where like they get on his bike and they both look at each other like, ugh, so what
it's
now?
It's as like, uplifting as it gets. Like, you walk into this thinking like, did he just like birth their child or something, and now they're a family? Like, they got married. If they had gotten married, that would make more sense. Like, if it was like an engagement thing.
Well, does he even say anything to her? He just comes in and picks her up, right?
Yeah. There is what is going on here is that because they were kind of broken up and now it's like, I guess they're back together.
Well, they were broken up, but like, and it was kind of, like, she had this understanding of just, or he seems to think, well, oh yeah, I alluded to this earlier. Like, there's a crazy scene in the sort of the middle of the movie where she gets pissed at him. He's like, you're treating me like a whore. You know what I mean? Like, you're treating me like dog shit. And then he kind of says sorry to her and they patch things up. But then eventually he's like, and again, this is where I go, like, you know, he's all over the place.
What happened?
Like, no,
what
actually
happened? There's a very funny arc that he has. Is he's like he's so it's after that, like, you're treating me like a whore line, and he's really, he has improved himself, and he's going to their family dinner, and it's, he's trying really hard, you know, and kind of trying to be nice and stuff. The family's, the dad in particular, doesn't like him because he's kind of like, what's the deal with your dad? And that is when Deborah Winger drops, well, my mom, my biological dad, was an officer in training, got my mom pregnant when she was, like, really young, immediately abandoned her, and they're worried that you're going to do that to me. And his response is, well, I guess I'll just abandon you now then.
not exactly. Like, he's like, well, shit, no wonder he hated me. And then they leave the scene with his arm around her, but then it's like scene missing where it's just like,
that is from then on. He's like, I'm cutting the cord. We're not dating anymore. Like, I can't date you because you have bad history with officers of abandoning you. So why don't I just abandon you now? Kind of thing.
Well, that's why I say scene missing, because, like, you would think there'd be a scene in between where Gossett Jr. is like, do you want this or not? You know what I mean? Something that where he's confronted.
I think it's spelled out. Like, he's afraid of letting her down. And so just avoids it.
So I'm going to edit early, basically.
I mean, you get the scene of, like, where she calls and it's like, hey, it's time for our weekly hangout. And the bass guy is like, oh, let me find him. And she goes to find him and he's like, tell her I'm not here, you know? Like, that's...
Well,
I guess
there's no scene of him, like, making that decision. It's like he's already made up his mind afterward, is what I'm saying. Like, there's no scene of him contemplating this. Like, what am I going to do? What choice am I going to make? But you know what I mean? That was the thing where it was a little hard to nail him down.
I don't know,
like,
if you need that, though, because I think you see him make the choice and that's all you need. I don't know. I get what you're saying, though.
I guess he tells her later where he's just, like,
it is abrupt.
Just, like,
it is abrupt, and it's kind of like there's a bit
abrupt,
of whiplash. Yeah. And that when he... And yeah, it's basically that, and then he comes back to the factory and picks her up. They interact, but that's the real, like, we're back together moment.
I guess that's what it is. Everything was so abrupt from him. I couldn't nail him down. You know what I mean? I was just like, what does this guy want?
Yeah.
It's like, is he an officer or a gentleman?
I mean, I think it's a very Hollywood love story of just, like, they're together. Who else cares about anything else? Like, they're back together. That's the end of the movie. Like, it is almost like a musical or something in that last scene. But it's funny to compare it to the suicide. But it's just like that and the suicide do stick out of me of these, like, dramatic escalations that kind of in a very good grounded movie kind of come out of nowhere, I feel like. Because the movie is pretty pretty low key, but for those two scenes, which are both, like, extremely heightened events.
Well, that's the aspect of the story that's craziest to me. The part that's, like, the most normal and routine, and I don't mean that as a bad thing, is the boot camp side, the Louis Gossett Jr.
Yeah,
bit.
Let's,
like,
get
that's
into
the
that.
Most straightforward. Like, this is a boot camp movie.
I love this stuff.
And I thought those scenes were great. Like, I'm a sucker for kind of underdog stories. I mean, he's not an underdog. He's, like, one of the best in the class, but it's more just, like, a character like this trying to, like, impress and, like, not defeat, but prove to his, like, overbearing, like, drill instructor that he's got the goods. And I think that movie does that story well. Gossett Jr. is great in this movie. As I said, there are a lot of great lines, like, come on, poopy asses. And he's you know, I'm sure this isn't the case, but while this probably wasn't the first, was this the movie that popularized that whole drill instructor persona?
It's got to be one of the ones you think
it's
of
be one
with
of the
that,
earliest,
that
right?
archetype. Yeah. I mean, I think of what, like Full Metal Jacket, obviously, but that's later.
That was like 5 years later.
Yeah. Is there any of that in Patton? I feel like there's some of that in Patton, maybe.
Well, I mean, Patton himself is kind of a drill instructor-esque character, but I don't. Yeah. I can't remember a movie before this.
The boot again, camp sequence kind of vibe.
Yeah.
Yeah, which almost feels like a trope at this point. And it is funny that, again, something is interesting about this movie is like the war movie in peacetime. And the role of the military.
Doesn't Gossett Jr. say something like, there could be a war tomorrow?
Right. There could be a war, but there's not.
yes.
And like, it's very different. Like, there's a distinct lack of like rah, rah, rah patriotism. Like, there's kind of half-assed, like, you love your country, right? You know, yeah, but you get the feeling if this were a war movie, there would be more emphasis on like, we're fighting the good fight, you know?
Well, it's strange. Like, in some of those boot camp songs, there's even, like, some of the songs that Gossett has them sing is just like, you know, the companies are evil and they don't care about using chemicals to kill women and children.
yeah. Because napalm sticks to little kids. Yeah. It's like that line. Yeah. It's basically like the U.S. military becomes therapy. That is what Richard Gere is looking for. Is he's looking for at the beginning of this movie when he's like, "I want to join the military." He doesn't care about fighting the war on behalf of the. He wants to fix himself, and he can fix himself by going to therapy, aka boot camp.
This will give me like a purpose.
That is the role of everybody in this boot camp. It's very interesting. Where it's like it's very much. Therapy. That is what these people need. That is what they are getting. That is the value of this, is they are being kind of honed into more successful people than when they started, you know?
And honestly, those scenes got me worked up. Like at the end when they're doing the last like obstacle course, and one of the we haven't mentioned this character. There is one female cadet
Sigur?
Trainer. Say again?
Is her name Sigur? They're always calling
Seagar. They call her, yeah, Casey Seagar. And she wants to be a jet pilot too, but she just can't get over that wall. She can't climb over that wall. She's great at everything else.
Let's go! You guys are bringing up the rear!
You ain't getting out of here until you get over that wall, Seagar.
I'll make it, sir!
Hurry up! Come on, get over there! You really want to be a man, Seagar? You another one of those little girls who didn't get enough of your daddy's attention because he really wanted a son, Seagar? Oh, that's it, that's it. That's what'll beat you every time, Seagar. Your mental attitude of a person of the female persuasion. Deep down under all that bullshit, you're still thinking like a second-class citizen, aren't you, Seagar? You can never give orders to men. Walk around, sugar britches.
And like, I got worked up at the end when like they're like Mayo is going for the course record. He's got it. It's in his grasp. But then he's like, oh, I see that Seagar is like still struggling on the wall. I'm going to go back. I'm going to sacrifice getting the record so I can help her, motivate her, or pull her up. And admittedly, it got me. I don't know what to tell you.
Mayo is like
one foot over the other. Come on.
Mayo's kind of whole thing in that he really like the breakthrough he has with this therapist, Louis Gossett Jr. is that he...
Oh, we should say his character name is Foley. They refer to him as Foley in the movie.
Louis Gossett Jr.?
Yeah.
Okay.
That Foley's a real hard ass.
So the Mayo's breakthrough is that, yeah, he can do this stuff. He can hang. He's good enough. But he has to look out for his teammates. You know?
Yeah,
he's no man in his island. And his weakness is... He's going to be the one to like abandon his squad in the middle of a fight. You know, the things go south and he's just going to fly away. You're going to give that ship to Cuba for all I know. And so his arc is really like helping out people and learning to be like a team player and support the team and like a rising tide lifts all boats and all that. So yeah.
Or in the case of the other part of the story, it's like, hey, I know we broke up, but I need you to help me find my friend or whatever.
Right. And he, the culmination of that is, he's about to break the course record, Amity stops to help Seeger.
That's kind of the end. Get that great scene, that moment that I'm always craving in these scenes, these types of movies, where the hard-ass drill instructor, like when he sees he can go back and get him, and they complete the course together, he gives that little look that you know, like, damn it, Mayo, you're not bad, Mayo.
You son of a bitch, Mayo.
Yes, you're all right.
Not bad.
And those
for
are the
rookie.
Scenes that I think really work for me in this movie. Again, we should say,
how did
Gossett
you feel
Jr.
about
one.
How did you feel? How much were you crying when Mayo graduated and had that interaction with Louis Gossett Jr.?
The look, well, because it gets
screw the fireworks factory and picking her up and walking away. This is
screw that.
This was the emotional end of the movie.
This was the emotional end of the movie for me. And it's like when characters are struggling not to cry and get emotional, I get emotional for them.
Oh,
because
God!
Gossett
Jr.!
Because he's giving it to, like, you know, he's giving like the little pens or whatever to, he's like, you're an officer now. All right, bye. And you get Seagar and like, oh, she overcame.
Yeah, it's just the line, you know, the graduating class that gone through the line, like, pleasure working with you or whatever he says, you know, congratulations.
And then when Mayo comes up because at the beginning of the movie, you get the sense that Gossett Jr. is like, this guy's got potential. This guy's going to be my project for this whole movie.
Yeah.
And he's super proud of him, but he can't just say it. And then when Mayo's just like, I'll never forget you, you know, Sergeant Foley or whatever. And he's just like, go on, get out of here, Mayo. I love you, you bastard.
Congratulations, Ensign Mayo.
I'll never forget you, Sergeant.
I know.
I wouldn't have made this if it weren't for you.
Get the hell out of here.
Thank you, Sergeant.
Again, I was
you're
getting
like
worked.
The
that
son
the
I never had,
climax.
Mayo. I understand. Yeah, I'm like the father. It's like you're like the son I never had, Mayo.
Yes. I'm damn proud of you, son. He can't say it, but you could tell, and I've mentioned this before in this show, he does the Captain Kirk lip quiver, and that gets me every time, you know, he's like, he's trying not to cry.
Yeah. It's so funny, like, the next guy, too, who graduate, like, because you see him
walk
away.
Oh, yeah, you're
and
great, too.
Like,
all right, bye.
All right, good scene.
You're one of the lesser characters in this movie. Yeah. All right, good job. All right, go on your way. But yeah, that's the real emotional climax for me, and I think that's what this movie does best. And to be fair, like, you know, I think the cast is good. Like, there are some, like, crazy moments, as we said, with the gentleman aspect of the story, but, like, I think everyone does a good job, and it's well shot. I forgot the guy's name, but this was shot by the same guy who shot Thief.
Interesting. That was Donald E. Thorin.
Yes.
Is the cinematographer for it. Yeah, what else? He did Bad Boys.
Oh, wow. And this was a big movie. Like, it had a relatively small budget. It was, like, under $10 million, and it ended up grossing almost $200. It was one of the biggest movies of the year. It's often cited as a lot of critics apparently were saying it was the best movie of the year. I don't know about that. E.T. also came out this year. I mean, and also Megaforce, obviously, you know. So there's some contenders for best movie.
Oh, yeah, Megaforce, you know, I'm sure, is... Donald E. Thorin, just looking at his filmography.
The cinematographer.
Yeah, cinematographer. Last few movies he made didn't probably end on his strongest. The last few movies he had were Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls, Dudley Do-Right, the 2000 remake of Shaft, and his last credited movie is the 2003 Chris Rock movie Head of State. Where imagine if a black guy were the president.
Well, yeah, this was well reviewed. Ebert loved it. He gave it 4 out of 4 stars, Mike.
I saw that. Yeah, he. It seems like they were really into, like, him and Siskel, that this was like a good old fashioned love story. Like that was their kind of takeaway.
Characters killing themselves, you know, that old trope.
Yeah. God, just a guy, a dead body you find.
Oh, and we should say, we haven't gotten...
It's not just he kills himself. Like, that scene is harrowing.
Yeah. Like, they go in there. It's like, where are you, buddy? Like, yeah, he usually goes to this hotel room.
And he's like, they find him dead. And he's like, hung himself. And they have the, like, call the hospital or whatever. And she's like, yeah, looking at him like, really? You know, call the hospital? This guy's dead.
Just do it, okay?
Just call the ambulance. Oh, God. Like, it feels like a different movie. It really does.
And one thing we haven't mentioned. So we talked about the Puget Sound Debs, and they're going to trap officers. This is what they do. And again, it gets into what we were mentioning, like this weird world. Like, they have this gathering. I don't think it's ever specified what this gathering is. It's like at some rec hall or something. And there's like a line of people.
It is the gathering to show off the men. Like, hello.
It really is. They never state what the purpose of this gathering is. But from what I can ascertain, it's just like, all right, Puget Sound Debs, here are the men you can trap. And Mary.
You know the like old timey like southern thing of like when a woman turns a certain age, it's like, we're having her debut.
We're showing her off.
Yeah. Yes. This is that for the cadets.
That's what it seemed to be like. And I was like, this is crazy.
They're probably like handing out like invitations around the town with like photos of the men. Like, at this party, you could meet Mayo. It's like, running.
But like one thing about this movie that we haven't mentioned, although I'm sure you can kind of get at it, the movie is hinting at it. I have a note here. This movie is horny.
say that about every movie. You said that about Megaforce.
There's the sex scenes with him and Deborah Winger are like, damn, they're, yeah. I mean, it's not like super graphic.
Was a movie that I was like watching, you know, in the store, you know, I had the windows open. It was the middle of the day. And there was part of me like, should I shut the windows? Like, in case anyone walking by, like, sees this.
It's like, you don't, I mean, you kind of do at one point, you see kind of like grinding, but they are like, there's a scene where they're just straight up having sex.
You see a lot of Richard Gere's butt, I believe, in this movie.
And there's also this, yeah, there's
Richard Gere,
like,
by the way, like, oh my gosh, he looks good in this movie. Like,
I will admit, the American gigolo is looking pretty good. Yeah.
I think I'm used to seeing Richard Gere a little bit older than this, too. And it was interesting seeing him, like, so young.
And I think we even mentioned on the Pretty Woman episode, or at least I did, like, I didn't get the people going gaga over Richard Gere.
Yeah.
After watching this movie, I get it now.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. Like, yeah, I'm used to seeing him as Pretty Woman. Which is not like he's, like, an old man or anything. But it's just he's an older man. I'm not used to, like, the
Well,
younger.
Also, to be fair, in Pretty Woman, he's a creep. So that hurt it for me, too.
I do think that the ages of these characters are a bit unclear for me. Like, I thought they were a little older than I think they are. Because
he's a college graduate, so he's got to be in his like early, like mid 20s, maybe.
Well, she has the Deborah Winger character. Remind me her name again.
Paula.
She has a line that stopped me in cold, dead in my tracks. I don't know if you're aware of what I'm about to say. She's like talking to Mayo, and she's like, I don't want to end up like my mom. She's been working at the factory her whole damn life, and now she's 39.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, so whoa.
Is she supposed to be like, I guess, early 20s?
I think it worked out. You know, if the mom had her when she was young, like, let's say, like, 18, then she could be, like, 22, right? Or, like, 21?
Early 20s, I guess.
Yeah. I think she's supposed to be, like, 20 or, like, anywhere between 19 and 22, maybe, is, like, her age. But she looks older. Like, they both look... In my head, I thought they were, like, in their mid to late 20s.
It might be also just like, I think the
leaded gasoline in 1982 might have been
a little bit of that, but they have like a, like she was bringing a more older, like this character has been around. I feel that was the vibe I got. Like she's,
doesn't feel like she's like, that. I mean, she feels young and a little bit naive, I suppose, but not like she doesn't feel like she's 19. She feels like a little worldly, but maybe that's just like hard living, you know?
Yeah, it could be. Well, I mean, you know, like her friend lives in a shack. She has to work in the factory with her 39-year-old mom.
Which That's
a
so
recurring
funny.
Theme so far, like young mothers in this. Yeah. We had that with Poltergeist.
I mean, I think it might just be a different time, you know?
Yeah.
People had kids. It's so crazy to me imagining like having a kid at like 19 and like starting a family at that age is wild. I mean, people do it. People do it. People do it today. It used to be way more common.
Thirst for a bit. I thought Deborah Winger was hot as hell in this movie.
Well, the floor is yours.
And we should
thirst
also
away.
Say she got a Best Actress nomination for this too.
Did she for the Academy Awards? Mm-hmm. Louis Gossett Jr. won, didn't he? Or he
won. This also won for Best Song. Those are the two Academy Awards it won.
The song is so funny. This is definitely one of those movies where they like know they have a song and they use the song. Like we hear this song for various. Yes, we hear that melody or variations on that melody more than a dozen times in this movie. It's probably
and
once every 10
of,
minutes.
I mean. I was of two minds because it got me worked up, but it was also again I was also kind of chuckling because I think this that song and that,
you
that
hear
the ending
this, of, they open the door to see the dead corpse and the suicide like
where we belong.
Well, I think this is a case I had to stop while I was watching it. Like, is the ending of this movie and that song too popular and zeitgeisty for its own good? You know what I mean?
I have a.
Did it become
I have a
parody
take on this song? Does any of the song matter, other than? Okay, so the song, right? You got
love lifts us up where we belong, where the eagles fly.
Does anything about the? Any, okay, that. Does anything else in that song matter? Can you name? Can you?
No.
Sing anything else, like a verse,
no.
Any other lyrics. It's just that little bit.
It's just that.
This song is like 15 seconds, and just that's all it needs to be. That's the song. That is all of it.
Yeah, I think you're right. Which again is another reason why it kind of makes me laugh. It's just such. It's kind of a nothing song, really. It's just that moment, really.
It is. It's a really good little melody, and like it's a. It's the melody you'd want in like a scene transition in a sitcom. Or something.
But it is, but again, I go back to, like, is it too, like, big for its own good? Because it kind of, it felt like almost parody at this point. And it's like, is that the movie's fault, or did it just become so popular and so well-known and parodied that, like, it's hard to look back on the original seriously a little bit?
Yeah, it's tough. It's interesting because, like, the thing is so divorced from the movie itself. Like, it's just that scene could be... Who knows what's going on in that scene? It doesn't really matter what the rest of the movie was, or, you know, you just man picks up woman in factory.
And then she takes his hat and wears his hat.
Yeah. Like, okay, they're leaving. Like they're, you know, it's,
walking
that's probably why
sunset.
It picked up. It's just like a very universal, like it could be a Coke ad, like, you know,
or an
ad
well,
for
that
life
would make
insurance.
Sense for the fifth, like, that they only have 15 seconds of song. Like this is a
right.
quick ad.
It'd
you know?
Be a great jingle.
I'm sure it's been used in a jingle before.
Love lifts you up where we belong. Drink Coca-Cola.
Yeah. Well, any other thoughts on Officer and a Gentleman? As you said before we started recording, this is a very simple story.
It is. It's like it's the thing that's charming about it, I think, or something that is charming is there aren't really again I keep going back to the suicide. It really rubs me the wrong way. Something I like about this movie is this: there's stakes, but it's not like they're not like grandiose. There's not like, you know, for a war movie, there's no war. For a
There's
love
no
story.
One's doing this because like, oh, I gotta get into the war, you know. It's like, no, there is no war.
It's all people working on their own problems, like their own and I think that's kind of like what the best thing about this movie is the characters. They're pretty well written. Again, that suicide, put away the suicide, pretend that didn't happen. The characters are pretty three-dimensional and I think have interesting like real motivations. Like it's more grounded than a typical sappy love story, you know, like capital L, like love, you know. It's not that, but it like dabbles in that kind of mode a bit, but it's more grounded, and I think it works better. Like I can imagine, you know, typical like heterosexual date night
The guy's like, I want to see an action movie, you know, I don't want to see no love stuff. But I feel like this would rise above your traditional, like, sappy love story to be like, both people like it kind of thing.
Mm.
The boot camp stuff is great. I love,
that's well done. Yeah.
Really love Louis Gossett Jr. in this. I see why, like, him in particular really popped off critically from this, because the performance, I think what's so good about it, you kind of hit on it, is he's playing the hard-nosed character, and there's nothing in his dialogue to suggest the deeper feelings he has for Richard Gere, but they're very obvious. And that's why I put it on the actor. I feel like that's got to be the actor doing a great job of, like, there's no lines, there's very little, like, facial acting, but I don't know how he does it, but he does kind of get across, like, the deep feelings he has for the Richard Gere's character. Like, he really, you can tell he really cares about him.
We didn't mention arguably the scene of the movie when he's riding Mayo hard.
I got nowhere else to go. Go.
I want your D-O-R.
No, sir.
I want your D-O-R.
I ain't gonna quit.
Spell it.
D-O-R. I ain't gonna quit.
Yeah, then you can be free and you and your daddy can get drunk and go hall chasing again, huh?
No, sir.
D-O-R.
I ain't gonna quit.
All right, then you can forget it. You're out.
Don't you do it! Don't you! I got nowhere else to go! I got nowhere else to go!
I got nothing else. I got nothing else.
All right, Mayo. On your feet.
We didn't mention the drill instructor is doing a lot of like, they do a lot of like normal military things. They're like doing the obstacle course, running up and down stairs, doing the flight training kind of thing. But Louis Gossett Jr. also has his own like karate dojo.
Martial arts dojo.
This stuff is funny. And the role of karate in this movie, when he gets in the fight with the locals and he goes into full, Richard Gere goes into full karate mode,
yeah!
It's so stupid. This is so silly.
I'm like, this is stupid, right? As we were watching it, I'm just like, this is dumb.
This is dumb, right? This is not how people fight. Like, this, I would laugh if someone's like, whoo, I'm ready. It's like, well, he gets into, like, I'm putting my fists out. My fists are out. I'm in fighting mode.
Well, he gets into, like, a Bruce Lee stance. Yes. He's, like, bopping
it's
around.
It's his stance. That's the thing that cracks me up. He's like,
and I'm just like, do they really do this in Navy school?
maybe there, this is hot off the 70s and the popularity of some of those kung fu things. I could see the way the world works, Dave. I could see some like guy showing up like, hey, military, I have a great karate program. It's actually a deadly, you want to train your soldiers to be deadly weapons themselves. Pay me, you know, a bunch of money and I'll be a consultant. And now we have this karate component to our training program.
It just felt so goofy because like I'm certain that they have like self-defense courses. As Gossett Jr. says, like, you get shot down, you have to defend yourself if you don't have a gun, whatever.
Yeah.
But like I picture it more as like they're in a gym. And he's just wearing like a t-shirt and like, you know, sweatpants.
And they're
or something,
probably not doing martial arts, which is more like performative and like,
it would be, I picture it being more like self-defense moves. Like if someone has you in this hold, this is how you can get out of it type thing.
Right.
But in this, he's full on wearing like a black karate gi and like a red headband.
It would be like, you know, that those Red Letter Media, like half in the best of the worst. You ever see the surviving edged weapons video?
Yeah.
It'd be like that. That would be like the training I feel like they would get. It would be a lot of like, here's
what
how
to look out for,
here's how to quickly turn your bottle into a deadly weapon, you know, break it over someone's head, you know. And like, whoo, get into the karate stance. And
yes, it just felt goofy to me. And like, I will say though, as goofy as it is, I love like one of the big scenes of the movie where he's like, all right, come on, you're like, you and me, son of a bitch, let's just go, you and me, motherfucker.
Yeah.
And they go in,
we gotta fight
and, like,
about
he tells
our
everyone
feelings.
Like, Yes, it's like, all right, fall out. And everyone there is just like, are they really going to do this? He's like, come on. And then they take their shirts off, and there's a moment where
I thought they were
going
to talk. He says, like, I want to talk with you. And I thought they were going to talk like adults. But no, they have to fight about their feelings. They cannot talk.
And this is where he, again, Mayo kind of earns his respect. Like, oh, shit, he took me down. He kind of beat the shit out of me. I mean, granted, I got the last move. I totally destroyed his genitals.
Oh, my God. Is that the most devastating nut kick that we have seen on this show?
I felt it. Because he full on, like, he's about to
Richard
lay,
Gere
like, a...
sells it. Richard Gere maybe should have got nom for how well he sells this nut punch.
Well, because he does this move where he's gonna like karate chop him with his like a kick or something, like he's gonna kick down real hard.
Yeah.
But that when he's exposed, that's when Louis Gossett Jr. like up kicks.
It's
his
such
groin
a. It's kind of cool. It's very like Street force. Fighter, like when the guy's like jumping over you to like attack, and then your character does like whoop, like a upper punch, like punch up, and just punches
him
right
him
in the
square in the crotch, and it's just like. Dude, I don't
think Richard
Gere
is going to like throw up after that. Yeah, he's not having kids.
Like,
he's not having kids.
He's certainly not having any more late nights with Paula, that's for sure.
Maybe that's what maybe the Louis Costa Jr. is like, now the Debs can't get you, you know. That was his like secret technique, you know, that he's actually like,
but,
hey,
like,
I'm doing you a favor.
It.
You're now
because
sterile.
He has doubled over. He's just like, if he can come back from that, then essentially, like, yeah, you could be an officer or whatever.
Come back from my nut punch
it's
of
your
doom.
Choice. If you can come back from me totally destroying your nuts,
there's always one kid in every class whose nuts I destroy. But there's so many. There's so many. I keep making that joke because I feel like there's so many lines in this movie where it's like there's always one person in this class who X Y like something something well, again, like.
That's why I say like while this probably wasn't the first, is this the one that popularized this?
Yeah, I.
It feels like it might be.
It feels like a great contender, you know, especially the Louis Gossett Jr. character, like that trope of like the hard ass, but also with the heart of gold kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, and also you said the stakes of this movie are kind of low, but like there are some stakes where it's like, hey, this in this boot camp, like some people you could potentially die.
Yeah.
Like there's that scene.
It's like Top Gun, right? Very similar movie where it's like a war movie in peacetime.
During peacetime. Yeah. Like there's that scene when like they're all trying that thing, like, all right, you're going to sit like in this thing. It's going to like drop you into this pool with a lot of force.
Yeah.
And you're going to be strapped up. You got to try to unstrap yourself and get out of the pool, basically.
I love that they let Seeger be good at that, too. Like,
She's all like, yeah, that was fun. Let me do it again.
I actually kind of like where they went with Seeger's character because for a bit, I'm like, are they just going to do the thing like, oh, she's a woman. She can't do anything. It's like, but it's very specific. It's like, no, she just doesn't have a lot of upper body strength. Like, that is it. That is the thing. Because, of course, women have great lower body strength, not so much upper body strength. You know, I'm sure she was out squatting all of them. But when it gets to the point where it's like the very specific thing of just like use your chest muscles, she's having a problem. But she's really good at like that underwater scene. She like kills it. And she's like, well, isn't that the one where she's like, can we go again? Like, I love that.
And again, I love these moments when that happens. Foley is just like, good job. You kind of crushed it.
Yeah. He says, not bad for a beginner or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, but the whole
really, he's saying like that was fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Seeger,
yeah. In his language, he's like, "Holy shit, you just killed it."
But yeah, we should. Yeah, I mean, it can't be said enough. Gossett Jr. in this movie is great.
What I really want in this movie. I understand why it's not in there. I'm not saying this is a criticism, but it's like it endears this kind of feeling about the characters. I would love an after credits scene, just 5 minutes. They've graduated of Foley, Seeger, I guess the corpse of Sid, and Mayo just all getting a beer and just like talking, like, all right, Let's drop the kayfabe. We're graduated now. Let's
we
just
don't
like
get
chat.
That, but
I want to know about Louis Gossett Jr.'s life. Like, does he have a family? Does he have a kid?
We do get a great scene, which is fun, when like Foley's on his motorcycle, he's leaving, and he stops real quick to see the next class of recruits.
Right.
And Foley is giving the exact same, you know, speech or whatever.
He does,
like,
the
only two things come out of Arizona or whatever.
Yeah, because when we first saw Sid, RIP, he's like, where are you from? Oklahoma. And then, only two things come out of Oklahoma, steers or queers, which one are you?
Yeah.
And then, yeah, he sees him. The next class is like, where are you from? He's like, Tucson. Only two things come out of Tucson, steers and queers. Which one are you?
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
And Mayo just kind of chuckles to himself. And I would have liked to have seen is just a shot of like Foley kind of chuckling to himself, and then it cuts to, or no, Mayo kind of chuckling to himself. And then I would have loved to have seen a moment, a close up of like Foley, like seeing Mayo and just sort of giving kind of a nod or something. You know what I mean? A look. That would have been great.
Salute.
But you're right. I did have the thought too. It's like, are these guys friends afterwards? Because now that he's graduated, like, can they meet up, or is that like against? Is that like an unspoken, like,
I say this more as a compliment to the movie, but it's just like I would love to see a scene where they like just get a beer together and drop the kayfabe and just get to be like,
yeah,
you know, hey, you were good there. Like, what's your how long you been teaching? You know,
like that. I think that would have been the closest we could have gotten to that. Is if Foley had acknowledged Mayo when he's sitting on his motorcycle and he's giving the
release the nod cut
recruits.
Yeah,
exactly. Well, I was almost expecting a moment like earlier in the movie, like when they're going through the course, like the advanced class that's above them, whatever, the people who are already past this, like, go by. He's like, you don't get to look at them, they're too cool for you guys, they passed already. I was expecting something similar in this when Mayo says something like that to the recruits, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. You don't get to, and I expected Foley to say something like similar, like, don't look at him, he's an officer, you haven't achieved that yet.
Yeah. Do we talk about like what a smash this movie was?
It was the third highest. It was only behind E.T. and Tootsie,
and the budget was not E.T. or I don't know if Tootsie was a high budget movie, but the budget was low.
It was low.
Like $7 million, $7 million total. Ended up making $190 million, which I feel like in today's money, I mean, I'm not exaggerating. I think we would be getting like around $1 billion, right? Like,
I don't know about that, but hold on.
Yeah, we're all like typing. Running through the inflation calculator
it would be worth about almost $660 million today. So that is huge.
I mean, that's a massive,
movie like this, that's huge.
Cost basically nothing. I mean, we're talking like an Obsession level return on your investment, you know?
Exactly, yeah. and this, I don't know if American Gigolo was before or after this, but this was the movie that really cemented Richard Gere. Like, he is a leading man. People think he's sexy. Like, is he going to show his wiener in one of these movies? He seems to be getting close.
He's getting close.
This is an era where, like, there were you would see a lot of sex scenes where, like, you wouldn't see, you know, full frontal male nudity, but, like, it would get close. Like, the guy would be fully naked, and then he's, like, pulling up his drawers in a moment, and it's like Roadhouse. Like,
yeah.
I think we see pubes. You know what I mean? It's like, that was always kind of interesting to be, like, and we kind of talked about this in Fast Times.
We almost had it in Fast Times, but the studios wouldn't
let us. Amy Heckerling, the director, was just like, let's equalize this stuff. Yeah. Like, we always get full frontal.
Executives
like,
are just
nudity.
Like, no.
No, no dogs.
If you want to show more boobs, though, that's fine.
You know what? I'll give you pubes. Well, you can have pubes, but that's as much as we're going to give you.
And the director of this movie, Taylor Hackford, is an Apocalypse Video alumni. Do you know the other film he made that we've covered on this very show?
I'd have to look. I don't know.
The Devil's Advocate.
Of course! Yes! What a career.
He also directed Ray, the movie Ray that won all those Academy Awards.
I tell you
Awards.
About that Richard Gere, he's got a great ass. Okay, Al. Anyway, Officer and a Gentleman. I'm glad I finally saw it. You know, this was a big movie. As we said, the ending of this movie is very like in the zeitgeist in the song, and I thought it was good. I certainly think I kind of gravitate more towards the drill, the boot camp portions of this movie. I think those are really well done. It was just a little, and I guess that's the point. It was a little harder to nail down the gentleman aspect of this movie because Richard Gere is so...
Well, he doesn't get a diploma for the it's really obvious when he becomes an officer because he gets the ceremony or whatever, but there's no ceremony for him becoming a gentleman.
Well, it's a constant work in progress, I suppose. But it's like, as you said, like it's more abrupt. We don't get those scenes of him contemplating, trying to make a choice. It just sort of happens. And those were the things that kind of like, they were like... speed bumps for me a little bit on that aspect of the
story. I think there's a bit of like, and it all worked out. It's kind
of
like,
yeah,
like I guess, okay, sure. And like, for me, like I say, that swerve of
the
you get the emotional swerve of the suicide and then the swerve of the ending where he picks her up. It is like, it's abrupt. It's kind
and
of
those weird. Are the parts that didn't work for me. Like it didn't all work out for me. I
know I've like, I keep bringing up the suicide. Did that not work for you too? Or is that what you're saying? Or did you mind that? Did you think it did work?
Again, like it maybe it would have been a little more better if like we got those in between moments where we see Sid like having that realization, like I'm trapped, or he emotes that more.
I think we should have seen him in a just like,
or like
total...
if he saw his family, like that could have been a great scene. Like if he saw or talked or spoke to his family, you know what I mean?
I feel like just what I would expect out of that character is they found him in. Like, he wouldn't be dead. He wouldn't have killed himself, but he would have just been, like, in a total drunken stupor. And, like, he's, like leaving Las Vegas mode where he's, like, I'm just going to drink myself to oblivion. And they find him and kind of help him out of it. That's kind of what I was expecting, I guess. And it's not like I'm criticizing it because it did something I wasn't expecting. I mean, that but
well, I don't think...
I just don't believe
they
that character
really
would
nail...
do that.
They just don't, I don't know if they really push enough how much of a big deal it was supposed to be to his family that he does this.
Right.
Because, again, that's where I say, like, if they had a scene where his parents are speaking to him, even over the phone, you know what I mean? Where it hammered home a little more how
he's
big
like
a deal
lying
was
about
to them.
How well he's doing or something. You know, like.
Something. I mean, like, I just didn't feel it enough that it was such a big deal.
I think the thing, though, is, like, maybe tough to get across is he's almost like, for the first half of the movie, like a comedic relief kind of character.
Yeah.
Like he's so like lighthearted that it is just like, you know.
Oh, I guess we were missing this bit where like this guy, if he doesn't succeed like in this, like his life is fucked.
I mean, and you could say like that's how it happens in real life. It's, you know, people you at least expect like, sure, but like it's a movie, you know, it's not.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
And it's a certain kind of movie. Like it's a love story. You know, this isn't The Deer Hunter or, you know, Apocalypse Now or Full Metal Jacket. Like it's not that movie. And it's weird. It's almost a bit of like, I think wanting to have a cake and eat it too. Where it's like, this is a serious movie about like the military or whatever. It's like, no, it's not. This is a movie about a guy who's going through using the military's therapy to be a better man. And he's also using this woman as therapy to be a better man in a different way, you know?
Yeah. So for me, I would definitely recommend this movie. As I said, I responded more to the boot camp scenes rather than the other scenes. Like, not that they're bad, but it's like I was missing some of those what could have been a little in between moments that could have sold those bits better for me.
Yeah.
But overall, I would recommend it. I enjoyed it. This was a good watch.
I'd recommend it too. I do think it's good. It's a good movie. I see why it's like so popular. Like I see why this
very
would
well
be.
Acted.
As they say, this feels like an early four quadrant movie. You know, like I could see the
vein of Titanic almost.
Yes. Yeah. I can see why this is like you bring. Like I said, you have date night. Everyone's happy with this movie.
Yeah. Well, you know, Mike. This is the penultimate episode of Where Were You in 82. And I got to say, you know, it's been summer, but I don't feel like we've really had a chance to relax. I mean, I know we've gone to the best whorehouse in Texas. You know, we were flying motorcycle rockets or whatever. Like we've had some good times, but I don't feel like we've really had a chance to relax, which is why in our final episode of Where Were You in 82, I'm going to get the whole gang up. We're going to get in the van. We're going to have a nice, relaxing weekend at Crystal Lake where nothing could possibly go wrong. And we could just let our hair down, drink some beers, you know, play some darts, go in the lake, just have a good time. You know what I mean?
I can't wait to drink alcohol and take my clothes off and nothing bad is going to happen.
Nothing bad at all.
Camp Crystal Lake.
Because when Where Were You in 82 concludes, as we go to Crystal Lake for Friday the 13th, Part 3, which, by the way, will be our final Friday the 13th installment.
No!
I can't believe it. We finally made it.
Say it ain't so, Dave.
The summer is really over, man. We're ending the summer promotion, and we're ending our Friday series. I can't believe it.
Wow. It's all coming. We gotta do something special for the last one. I'll think of something. We got to send out Jason Wright. I mean, I don't know if Jason's going to show up. Maybe this is just a nice, relaxing weekend at Camp Crystal Lake.
Yeah, it's basically Officer and a Gentleman on Crystal Lake. That'll be the movie. That's Part 3. Anyway, I got to go. My shift's about to start at the paper factory or whatever.
All right, yeah. My shift is about to start of picking people up at the paper factory and walking away to triumphant music.
We're busy, guys. All right, we'll see you next weekend, folks, when Wherever You in 82 concludes.
Request permission to carry on, sir.
Get the fuck out of here.